sports cards. I'm going to say here now on a national stage, I believe that the culture of sneaker flipping is going to bleed into sports cards because these kids can't get enough inventory with sneakers. I bought several hundred.
Okay, we are clear. Ready to go live in 5, 4, cue the talent, 3. Hey, I said cue the talent. 2, and 1.
Attention hobbyists, sports fans, and collectors nationwide and abroad. It's time to get hype.
Come on.
About the hobby we are all a part of. Live from the Mojo Break Studios, it's Dan and Doug.
Check it out.
Come on!
So, get hype. This is The Hype.
What is going down, everybody? The Hype podcast number 88 coming at ya. Sorry we missed you live yesterday during Bowman Day. It was a crazy day, so we decided to record an audio version today, Thursday, go over Bowman, go over what you guys just heard in the intro with Gary V and what he said about the sports card industry on the Rich Eisen show. Dan, what's going down, dude?
Chilling, man. A little tired. A lot of Bowman. I think we did about close to 20 cases yesterday, and it was good. I mean, it was kind of what we expected. It was, I have a little issues with the design. There's certain things about it I'm just not a fan of, but I think we'll get into that later. How you doing?
I'm feeling it too, man. I think
fingers hurt a little bit.
Yeah, fingers a little sore. I think Bowman Day, I think I was dreaming of Bowman. Maybe had some nightmares of Bowman and the base cards that need to be shipped. But also was very excited. We had Joe Staley in studio yesterday, who pulled a crazy Wander Franco gold. You can find that video on YouTube. I'll play some sound bites here later as well. And it was a crazy wild day that's going to get us right into Flawless on Friday. So it's just a crazy time in the sports card industry. So we'll talk about Bowman more in the show, but I wanted to jump into Gary V's comments on the Rich Eisen show. And it's been kind of trending. I mean, if you just got into sports cards, or if you've been in this hobby a long time, we don't really make it in the mainstream media. Having Rich Eisen and Gary Vee talk about sports cards is like, I mean, that's like grand stage for sports cards right now. So I wanted to kind of dissect what he said, talk about our thoughts being in this industry for the last 9 years and opening up cases and cases and cases of everything. So I wanted to just play, I'll play a few sound bites here, and it's coming from my phone, so if the audio is bad, I do apologize. But we started that little intro off.
To be had out of opening a $6 pack.
What are you talking about? What do you mean?
Well, I don't think people understand that sports cards are about to become a cultural phenomenon again, and so I'm just putting it on the record and media so I'm historically correct.
Why do you sense that?
It's already happened. If you've been watching, the market's been moving pretty aggressively for the last year. B, three theories. One, sneaker flippers are running out of inventory, and you can go buy, like I am right now, thousands of De'Aaron Fox rookie cards, if you believe he's a player. You can't buy 1,000, pairs of sneakers that are going to flip. Like, you can't get enough inventory. And so a lot of these entrepreneurs that are in the sneaker culture love sports and are going to do the sports card thing. That's one. Mm-hmm. Two, sports gambling and betting. In the background, you have Luka playing right now, mm-hmm. as an image. Right now, there are $5,000, $7,000, $10,000 Luka cards selling, not listed, selling on eBay. And those cards were pulled out of a $3, $4 pack of Prism basketball cards. Once people understand that, I think people are going to get their gambling fix out of opening cards. I don't think most people know that there's going to be several $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 Zion cards to be had out of $4 or $5 packs. That's like a lottery ticket. That's better than a lottery ticket because there's other cards.
So we'll stop there. There's a little bit more to it. For one, I want to know where you got a Prism pack for $3 or $4.
I was gonna be like, okay, love Gary V's insight. But again, when cards are selling for that much money, there's gonna be a larger demand for them. those prism packs are not and will not be $3, $4, $5, $6.
No.
Prism right now, a box on the open market is, you know, it's close to $300.
Right.
So there's 12 packs in it. Do the math.
Right.
It ain't.
I mean,
bucks.
I guess you could say fast break or something like that, but you're not going to get the cards he's talking about in there. You're not going to get the silvers. Yeah, you're not going to get the color.
I mean, he could be referring to what you would get at Target.
Maybe. Yeah.
You can probably get some Target packs, some retail packs, and get lucky with those. But the silvers, again, are few and far between. Not few and far between, but you know, you're going to get a lot more silvers. You're going to get a lot more of the parallels that are hobby exclusive in the hobby product. And again, if cards are blowing up like they are now, and it hasn't been just a year that we've seen, you know, the market going up. It's been since we got back into it.
Yeah.
You could say kind of the birth of group breaking that took cards into the digital age. And I think the group breaking aspect of it, and with the manufacturers getting on board, kind of boosted it into the market we're in right now.
Yeah, and I've talked about this before, and I think the technology being a little bit more accessible also helps too, is that we've got our generation, you know, I'm talking about guys that are, you know, 28 to probably 45 and 50, being able to navigate through YouTube, people's websites, eBay's more prominent now. I think we didn't have that in, you know, 89, 91, where we had that, you know, that boom then. So you're seeing in real time what cards are selling for, and you're also seeing in real time packs being opened on a daily, not only our site, which plug, if you're just listening to this, you can get into breaks, mojobreak.com. We have Prism, we have Bowman, we got lots of stuff on our website. But yeah, I mean, it's a little bit more accessible. Do you think it's still on the incline? I mean, are we in a bubble that's going to burst? I mean, there's so many good rookies right now in all the sports.
It starts getting to the point where it's a little excessive when you, and we talked about it before, when you go into your local 7-Eleven or Circle K or Wawa, wherever you are located in the country, and they have Prism basketball, like blasters.
Right.
We start getting to that point, we're going to start getting into the overproduction conversation that we had in the 90s. But the one crutch and the one reason why manufacturers can't do the overproduction is actually the content, the autos and the relics. They've built their clientele base to expect certain things out of packs and boxes. They've kind of pigeonholed themselves. They probably wish they didn't go full on autos and relics, because you can always add more. Customers don't like when you take away and they have less for the same amount of money they're paying.
Right.
So that is what I feel is where we're at right now. Our saving grace is the content, the autos and relics are going to prevent manufacturers from overproducing.
Right, and the numbered cards, things like that. Yeah. And for those of you who don't know who Gary Vee is, Gary Vee is an entrepreneur. He started with his parents had a liquor store, and they were immigrants from, you know, I don't know exactly where they were from, but his dad had a liquor store and he was grinding, you know, running a liquor store. And Gary Vee started wines.com, I believe, and basically did a wine of the month. And he didn't know anything about wine, but you know, his dad had wine in the store, so he's like, let's try to sell some wine. So he'd go on YouTube, make videos, and sell wine, and he just kind of blew up, and he started doing other investments. He's got Gary Vaynerchuk Media. He's got his own K-Swisses, which I own. I mean, this guy's all over, and he's like kind of a motivational speaker now. So, but he's a big sports car guy, and he got some of his early days of grinding away when he was a youngster, was going to card shows and picking up and flipping cards and stuff like that. So he's very passionate about it. And if you follow him on Twitter, you can see what he's buying. He was buying PSA 8 Charles Barkley's. He's talked about it in what we were just showing about the De'Aaron Fox's, and he's buying Giannis's and stuff like that. And we'll play the rest.
48-year-olds that grew up in the prime years of sports cards now have 5, 6, 7, 8, 9-year-olds.
Yeah.
And the same reason toys reboot every 30 years, G.I. Joe, Strawberry Shortcake. I believe that sports cards 87 to 93 was a cultural phenomenon. Yes. And now those people are going to relive it. So I'm making the prediction here on the Rich Eisen show that sports cards is an incredible alternative investment for the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, my kids love their basketball cards.
Wait, what about all the cards that I have?
Garbage.
Tens of thousands.
Garbage. No, garbage.
From the 90s.
Garbage.
From the early 90s.
Me too. I have millions. Garbage.
Yeah.
Why are those garbage?
Because there was too much supply, not enough demand.
Right.
So... You know, maybe you were smart and bought 86, 87 Fleer basketball,
sure.
And that has all the rookies in it, and that's an incredible set. But what most people have, 87 Tops baseball,
right.
Early Upper Deck, all that stuff, for the most part, that is not strong. What's strong is, you know, pre-1980 graded, you know, you send them to these companies,
yeah.
Beckett, PSA,
right.
And then the new stuff, like the one-of-one Giannis's that are like $10,000. Like, I think LeBron rookies, Kobe rookies, they're trading at about $1,000 a piece. Rated well right now are $5,000 cards in 3 years. So I'm excited. I'm glad I'm bringing it up here because I'll be happy to look at this clip in 3 years.
For more of the Rich Eisen show,
I gotta say it is absolutely a great thing to have somebody of that caliber of an entrepreneur in the hobby industry.
Oh yeah,
we definitely need people who think like this and think outside of the box and think big picture. I think a lot of us who do this on a daily kind of get stuck in our grind, our day-to-day grind, and we don't try to think of a bigger picture. And it's good to have people like that put it in perspective and in, for a lack of a better term, in the hobby's corner. So it's a great interview. It's a great insight, and I question a couple of the things he was bringing up. I question, I get it. I mean, he likes what he likes, and he was talking about Giannis, which I think is a strong investment. But there's other sections of the hobby and other sports and categories that are hotter than what he may be talking about. The baseball prospecting. He didn't go into that at all, really. And that's a completely different type of collector.
Mm-hmm.
That's somebody, but it is all about investments. It's all about waiting for that player to make a jump and when to sell it and when to hold on to it.
Right, and we'll definitely get into some of that with the Bowman, but it doesn't seem like he's a big prospector. It seems like he's more of a, you know, he's playing the safe route and he's picking superstars
to
invest in.
Buying Giannis rookies, and I get it because you're not like, oh, I'm going to go buy the Giannis silver rookie prisms graded already. How much are those? We're talking over four figures, right? They're like $1,200, $1,500 for a Giannis silver,
mm-hmm.
somewhere around there. Where the Giannis regular Prism rookie, I mean, there's a ton of them. You can probably get them raw for,
well,
you know,
We go back to the fact that we were using hitless packs of 13, 14 Prism.
It's a bad investment to go out and buy the most expensive cards of a certain player because there's less room to grow. With your
and
investment.
He's not doing that. He's just grabbing
exactly. So I get that mentality. I get that aspect of buying a lot of something at a lower price point and wait for it to go up rather than buy something that's at
20
the peak,
grand, 30 grand, right?
And then how much is it really going to grow? It's harder to sell something that's at that $10,000 to $15,000, $20,000 mark because you need to find somebody who has that type of money who wants it.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at here on eBay recent auctions of just Prism Base. We're not talking silvers. We're talking Prism Base of Giannis, not graded, $190 via auction. Just a base card. Just the plain old base cards are going for $190. So I'm talking about you probably get...
That blows my mind.
It's insane.
That blows my mind.
It's literally insane. You thought he was talking about silvers probably, right?
I knew he was talking about, I actually thought the regular rookies, because granted, we talk about this all the time. We used to do hitless packs, 13, 14. We were buying 13, 14 Prism, not kidding.
Like 30
We were buying it for $30 a box. And we were actually giving packs away for people who went hitless in our breaks. We probably gave away hundreds of thousands of dollars of Giannis cards.
Yeah, smart.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars of Giannis cards. I mean, put that in perspective. We don't send out hitless credits and we just hold on to those cards. We're looking pretty good.
Well, back then, when that was 13, 14, we had to buy that to get 14, 15, and T.
Yeah.
And so the distributors are probably just as mad because, granted, they made money overall. They had it at MAP. But, I mean, I'm sure... I don't even want to look at what a prison box sells for now. I'm gonna be disgusted at the fact that we were getting something, giving it away. Hey, maybe the silver lining is people held on to those Giannises. I hope you guys got hitless packs that broke with us in 13, 14.
And I'm gonna.
But it wasn't nothing. There was no silver. Like Prism was a new brand, and 12, 13 was great on the simple fact that it had Kyrie, it had Anthony Davis, it had. You know, Klay Thompson later, it had Draymond Green, and that was a great class. It was Prism was back.
It was a double rookie class.
It was a double rookie class. And then 13-14 comes out, and you got Michael Carter-Williams, who Victor Oladipo.
Anthony Bennett was the first overall pick.
Which, not even in the league anymore. And it just tanked. I mean, nobody could sell it. I mean, people were chasing autographs then. They didn't understand the wealth of the Prism Silvers. And years later, look where we're at. It's just crazy. It's impossible to predict. I don't think anybody knew this was going to happen with Giannis cards. I mean, is Giannis a good investment, though? He plays for Milwaukee. The guy is
number one seed.
They're the number one seed.
Number one seed. I mean, you could actually say right now, I would say Giannis is probably the... most dominant basketball player in the league.
Do you think he's going to win a championship this year? Do you think Milwaukee's going to win a championship this year?
I don't know who's going to win a championship. The Warriors blew a 31-point lead. I don't know what's going on.
Right.
Could I see a Milwaukee Golden State Finals? Yeah. Do the Warriors have anybody on their team that can stop Giannis? I don't know. But... they don't have the other players around him that the Warriors do have.
Right.
And, I mean, you're looking at what, Chris Middleton had a pretty good year?
Yeah, and you got Robin Lopez, or one of the Lopez's, hitting threes over there. Brogdon, I think, has been hurt.
You see their second tier, and then you see the Warriors' second tier. And it's not even close. The Warriors actually don't have a second tier.
Yeah, but the Warriors
just have a lot of first tier guys.
But the Warriors have four All-Stars. And they got two, and Middleton's questionable.
Yeah, right? I mean, I think they go to the finals. Giannis still puts up his 30-something points a game. But they probably lose by 20 every game. They probably get swept.
Right.
I don't think that they match up well against the Warriors. Actually, I don't know if the Bucks match up well against the top four teams in the West.
Okay. Yeah. It's going to be tough. They're going to probably have to play the Rockets next. I mean, it looks like the Rockets are going to take care of the Jazz up 2-0. We never know.
Why do the Warriors play the Rockets next?
It's just the way the seeding is.
That is stupid. They need to
reseed.
Yeah. Why do they bracket? Why do they do this bracket? That's so dumb.
That's just what they've done. So they play the winner of Utah and Houston.
Utah. They're not.
Well, because Portland, well, I guess the theory is the Warriors are the first seed, and Utah and Houston's fourth and fifth. The next best seed is Portland, so Warriors shouldn't have to play the third seed. See? That's why they did it that way. So the second seed would have to play the third seed.
No, the Warriors should play...
You're saying reseed like football.
The Warriors should play whatever seed, the lowest seed that's still in the playoffs.
That's football, but they've always...
Whatever. Like, so let's say...
Yeah, like, well, it would be maybe San Antonio would win. They would play San Antonio but if everybody wins, here's the thing. So if Portland wins and Denver wins, then the lowest seed's Houston. So then you're right back to where you were.
Yeah, it's a lot of ifs.
Yeah, it's a lot of ifs, yes. And maybe it's not fair. It's my quarterback. But, you know.
But, dude, for the Warriors to have to go against the Rockets in the second round is tough.
Well, look, dude, the Milwaukee has to go against Boston. So, I mean, it's the same scenario. They avoid Philly until the next round, possibly. But these two teams look like they're running away. Milwaukee's 2-0 on Detroit. Boston's 2-0 as it stands here on Thursday when we're having this podcast. That's where we're at. But I want to get back to Gary V. You know... do you see what he said with 3 to 5 years? Do you see more growth? And what could the growth possibly be? Do we get into mainstream media? We're seeing a little taste of it now. We're dabbling in a taste in mainstream media. Do sports cards become, like he's saying, a cultural phenomenon? So right now we're not a cultural phenomenon, I don't think. I mean, because this is, if he's saying a cultural phenomenon, we should be able to walk into anywhere we're in and talk to somebody about sports cards, and you can't have that now.
Is it the, see, it's hard for me because do I see it happening? I'm not sure. Do I want it to happen that way? I don't think so.
Right.
Having the whole industry put under a microscope is something that I don't know if anybody who makes their living in sports cards wants to see happen.
Right.
And I'm not saying that there's anything that goes on that's illegal. I'm just saying it's tricky because you can buy a box of cards and you can pull a $10,000 card.
Right.
But you can buy a box of cards and pull a $1 card.
Right.
Is there anything in there that can be, if it's blown up, can there be lawsuits in the future where somebody's like, it's hard. Again, you look at kids' toys who are blind wrapped. If you put that under the microscope, essentially it's gambling.
I think what's kind of made this is my theory, of course. I think what's kind of made this okay is the fact that we can gamble on sports now in a lot of states, and it's becoming almost where it's, you know, FanDuel is you can, me and you could bet on FanDuel. Now in California we can't bet on sportsbook legal.
Yeah, but yet. They've already put the framework in place.
Right. So I would say
by 2021 in the state of California, and I would say about 70% of the states nationwide, you'll be able to do sports gambling.
Right.
Now if that gets passed, then this is just another element of it. And we're kind of
I feel. I mean, when we started breaking in 2010 and 2011, and we had that, like, are we doing stuff legally? Is this legal? You know, and we always went back to the fact that this isn't, we're not selling gold. We're not pulling something out of a pack that has, we're not pulling $100 bills out of packs, right? We're pulling a card that then has to sell to somebody, and it's based on what that person wants to sell. So there's no way to put a monetary value on it. But where I'm going with this story is the fact that gambling was more like, oh, it's taboo. We were on the heels of poker being banned, right? We had poker stars being shut down and all this other stuff. Gambling's bad. You guys are gambling, even though it's a game of skill. Poker went away, right? Poker went away. But now we've got FanDuel. We've got states
but
that are out.
FanDuel, you can have that argument where it's a game of skill.
Right, but why isn't poker a game of skill then?
Is opening a pack a game of skill?
No.
Not at all. I mean, no. I'd like to say I'm pretty damn good at it.
But we're going pro.
But I mean, if I had a system, I would probably just be opening up packs and not selling them. If I knew where all the great cards were.
Well, I mean, it's the same thing with playing poker. You're not going to get pocket aces every time. You know, you're going to get the cards that you get. No pun intended. But I'm saying, I think that's what happened. I think that now that this has become more of a cultural phenomenon. Obviously, with the rookie classes, we've had a great string of rookie classes. And, you know, we got to go back on the fact, you guys have heard me talk about this on the show before, Vegas Dave made the dream possible. And that is a big moment. Whether you guys think he's a douchebag or not, the fact that somebody spent $400,000 on a card that was printed in 2009, 10 years ago, and it went for $400,000, made everybody believe that was already on this side of things that this is possible with anybody. Now, and then you add in the FanDuel, you add in the fact that these sports are now being watched not only for that, you know, so I think it makes it kind of okay, and it makes it intriguing that these cards are going for that much and eBay showing all this data of these cards selling for X amount of dollars on a daily basis. You know, where I was going with this was how there's obviously, if you look at a percentage of sports fans, and you see the percentage of sports fans that play FanDuel. I don't know what the percentage is, but it's got to be 100 times higher than the people that watch sports and collect cards. Right?
I would say if I had to throw out a number, I would say about 25 to 35% of fairly avid sports fans have or consistently play FanDuel or any of the daily fantasy daily fantasy sports. As far as sports cards, I would say that is somewhere in the 3 to 5%.
Well, there was, I'm looking for these stats. I remember taking a picture at Topps' industry summit, and they had, MLB did a presentation.
I mean, it's got to be under 10%.
I'm looking for it right now. I took a screenshot because it was really astoundingly low for me at the time. The number of people that watch, and this is just baseball, that watch baseball and then collect cards.
But you you also realize that a lot of the people who go to these games and who are avid sports fans are, you know, probably in the age of 25 to 75.
Mm-hmm.
They remember sports cards. They remember collecting sports cards, and they remember all the stories about, you know, mass production and completely bottoming out and all that stuff. They remember that. Why would they want to get involved in that at this point? All they've heard is that sports cards were a terrible investment and they're worth nothing now. You talk about sports cards with anybody who doesn't know sports cards, what are they going to tell you? I heard sports cards aren't worth anything. Well, that has been the case for almost the last 20 years.
Right. I can't find it, but I believe it was like 5% of Major League Baseball fans collect cards.
I would say it's below 10%.
So that with the Gary Vee theory means there's an exponential amount of growth there, right? If there's 95% of people that watch baseball that don't collect cards.
Man,
I mean, that's silly.
Part of me looks at that, and we've seen the growth over the last 10 years. We've lived in this growth period. I don't know if it's healthy for the sustainability of this industry to grow more than it's growing now. I don't know either.
But, you know, people do, you know, we've been talking about it on prior podcasts. We've talked about it in the feed that, you know, how do we get the kids involved? Well, this seems like we're kind of going in a cycle, right? So we had our parents that were 50s, 60s, 70s babies that collected those cards, threw them away, and then saw those things go up because they created their own demand, right? And I'm keeping going here. So then we started collecting what Gary Vee said with the 89. Griffey came into play, made cards. Our parents were like, I got to get my son involved in this. Look at this. It's, you know, there's holograms on the back of the card. Ken Griffey Jr. is the greatest athlete that I've ever seen since Mickey Mantle. So they got us in, right? So now we're in a position where we have kids, our generation has kids, and it's the same cycle over again. So my question to you here is, then there's ultimately going to be a bubble if we're reliving history, right? There's ultimately going to be the junk wax era.
We're going to relive the exact, because that's what humans do.
Right.
They recycle and they do the same exact, we're going to go through the same exact issues that we went through with the junk wax era at some point. But my other issue with this is that you're talking about kids and getting them involved in that. Kids don't like sports like we like sports.
Right.
They, unfortunately, it's not is action-packed, and they don't have the attention span and really care about sports as much as we do. And I don't think they ever will. So I don't think kids will ever get involved. I hate to say that.
Well,
but I do think our generation that is in the, you know, maybe mid to late 20s, and they're starting to have, you know, disposable income, I think those are going to be the people who treat this as an investment and put their money into it and grow it, not bringing in kids. I think it's going to be the millennials who grow it and not growing it with kids.
Well, see, and I disagree with you there being a devil's advocate, because I think when we had the junk wax era, there wasn't real-time pricing. So now this era, if we're going through a cycle like we're saying,
Beckett, bro.
Well, yeah, but those go down when things don't sell. eBay is a daily. It's a daily thing.
When we were collecting, Beckett literally was the same exact thing. The industry took to Beckett price list. It didn't matter if it was in real time. When you came in and wanted to sell a card to a card shop, they would pull out the Beckett and they would give you based on the Beckett value. They'd be like, card is worth $100. I'll give you
$50.
I'll give you $30 cash or $50 store credit.
Right.
So what it was literally the same exact thing we're looking at eBay. It's just eBay we have up to the second time. Right. But the market was already based on...
And that's what I was going to say. We just had an incident with a 17-year-old. And so I'm using that as an example. They got a hold of their parents' credit card and spent a good amount of money. But I'm thinking these kids, the reason why I think the next generation could latch onto it is the fact that they are maybe involved in FanDuel and they see dollars. And they see quick money or they see... I can get this and sell it for that. And they kind of, you know, somebody that has an entrepreneur mindset, like a Gary V, like ourselves, maybe, as a kid, can be like, I could buy this, flip it, you know, and I could start making some money doing this. I think that might intrigue them more than the actual sport itself.
Could you see people doing this without having really any connection to sports in general?
I can, yeah.
Yeah, see, that's my thing where I have to disagree with you. I think in order to be a collector of sports cards... You have to have a passion for that said sport.
Well, and I agree with you that way because I think if you compare it to stocks, right? You are, you know, if you're thinking about putting a lot of money on a stock, you're going to go research that company.
Yeah,
right?
You're going to be in.
But I'm not saying if you're going to buy Wander Franco, you're going to go on YouTube and maybe look at his videos. You're not going to sit through a Rays game though. You're not going to sit through a Rays game. You're going to follow the articles on him.
It's the same thing. You're going to be, if you buy stocks for a company, you're probably going to be a fanboy for that company. Like if you go out and buy Fitbit stock, when you go out and buy a fitness watch, are you going to go out and buy a Samsung?
Right.
No, you bought stock in Fitbit. You did it because you believed in their company.
Yeah, right.
So you're going to fanboy out on their company.
Right.
If you don't have any connection with sports and it's just a monetary like reason for getting involved, you're as fast as you got in is as fast as you're gonna get out. You're gonna lose interest because you don't have a passion with it.
Right.
So
yeah, I mean,
and you're right. We may see a lot of people come into this who it's just about money, just about dollar signs. Those people are
we already see it, but
those people are gonna be in and out is super fast.
Well, especially on our side of things, right? I mean, the Gary V, I can't see him buying into breaks, and I was talking about that with other people. So there's type of collectors. The type of collectors that get into breaks are the hunters. They enjoy the hunt. They have enough money to go on there and buy a $3,000 Wander Franco, but it's not the same as getting it out of a pack or getting it in a break. That's the hunt. That's going in the forest. That's finding getting your prized possession. You hit that in a break, you got it, you know? And now you're holding on, and that's your guy.
Well, there's a sense of pride. The fact that it's almost the same thing as going out and hunting like a wild boar.
Right.
And you're going to basically come back and you're going to carry that meat back with you and you're proud.
Right.
That it's yours.
Right.
And you're probably going to convince yourself that it's the best pig you've ever had to eat in your life because you hunted it.
Right.
It's yours.
Exactly. No, and it's the same thing. Like if you're fishing, right? And I seen them in Tahoe, and you know, you're in Tahoe's in Nevada here. If you're on the other side of the coast, it's a, you know, people go there in the summer and people go there in the winter. It's got both seasons of tourism there. But you drive through the town and there's like places where you can fish, and you're like, and it says guaranteed to catch a fish, right? If you go to it, it's a guy that's basically, for lack of a better word, set up a pool in his backyard, and he's got 100 fish in a small cubic area, and you drip your pole in there, and you're catching something right away. Well, that's the equivalent of buying something on eBay. You're buying the card you want on eBay. There's no hunt there. Now, if you go into a big lake, you're on the boat, you have to get out, you have to get the bait, you have to, you know, drop your line in there in this huge lake, and you catch something, you're more excited than if you're just you're going in.
And
homeboy's,
man, I've done a little bit of fishing in my day, and fishing is it's difficult. It's about the long game.
Yeah.
So yeah,
probably like trying to hit a certain guy in breaks, right? Or buying your own boxes and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, it was very exciting to hear what Gary Vee had to say, and we're very hopeful for the future. And like I said, do you think that we're going to get to a point? Because right now I go out and I try to tell people what we do, and I try to tell people what I do. And you know, nobody understands it. I mean, are we going to get to a point? I'm saying maybe 1 out of 200 people know what I'm talking about nowadays, right? Are we going to get to maybe 1 in 50, 1 in 40? You know, I know that all these, you know, are people going to be more aware of if this is a cultural phenomenon that everybody's going to know? It's just like the small Beanie Baby craze, or the different collectibles that have popped for a minute.
Dude, in the late 90s, Beanie Babies weren't a small craze.
Oh, it was a huge craze. No, I know.
Mean, it was like...
But it didn't... I'm saying maybe it didn't last as long.
It didn't sustain. But yeah. I would say, what, maybe a year? But pop culture latched on the Beanie Babies. You couldn't go anywhere without Beanie Babies. When I was 15 years old, I worked at McDonald's. And they, in their Happy Meals, had Beanie Babies.
Yeah.
And there would be a line out the door constantly... And people would buy Happy Meals and then just throw the food in the garbage because they wanted just the Beanie Babies. And, dude, that was a cultural phenomenon.
Side note, if you're talking about that, I actually went through a McDonald's drive-thru in the morning with my 4-year-old.
And they had Beanie Babies?
No. So she's like, oh, let me get a Happy Meal. Well, it's breakfast time. They don't have a breakfast Happy Meal, which maybe they should. You know, that's a good marketing scheme. But I'm like, man. So I'm like, hey, can I get a toy? And they're like, yeah, $1.60. So they gave me the toy out of the Happy Meal for $1.60. I'm like, man, if I do this, I just do this all the time.
They always did that.
I didn't know that.
I would have people come in for, like, at one point they had Hot Wheels, and people would come in and they would just be like, I just want to buy the Hot Wheel, and you could sell it to me.
But why would McDonald's want to sell the $4 Happy Meal?
The Beanie Babies, we couldn't. That was the one rule, is that they were like, no, people have to buy.
Interesting.
They have to buy, but yeah, it's crazy. It was nuts, and I don't think we're going to get there with sports cards, but I know Taco Bell at one point was including cards...
They had
basketball cards. It might have been during like...
It was through Pepsi.
It might have been during the All-Star break or something like that. But they had a promo going on with basketball cards.
Well, I think that was on the heels of... before the movie, of course. But Uncle Drew's first appearance was through Pepsi ads, right? So it was... I think they were like, okay, Pepsi... Because I think Taco Bell's Pepsi, because you go to McDonald's, it's Coca-Cola, right? So it's all different.
You look at Hanes, and Hanes is inserting...
Michael Jordan cards
into, you know, T-shirts and underwear and whatnot. So...
Well, let me ask you this.
It may be happening. It's difficult for us to take a step back because we live in the industry every single day. It's hard to take a step back and get an outsider's perspective of what's happening.
Well, let's just say this, and this has been a fun topic to talk about here, is do you think, so Upper Deck, NHL license, NHL is supposed to be pretty big next year with Jack Hughes. If this becomes a cultural phenomenon, like Gary Vee saying, do they feel the pressure to sell their basketball amenities? Now, when I talk about basketball amenities, to let you guys know who are listening, Upper Deck owns the exclusive to Michael Jordan. So you're not going to get any Michael Jordan autos or any pictures of Jordan in any Panini product. They own the rights to LeBron James as well. Now, since LeBron James is a player association player, he's still active, Panini can put images of LeBron James, but they can't put autographs of LeBron James because he is owned, and I say owned, he is under contract with Upper Deck. Ben Simmons, same thing. They went out and signed Ben Simmons because he was part of LeBron's camp. LeBron's same agent. And Zion... rumored as well, a possible signing. Are they going to feel the pressure? So this is where I'm going with the story. Are they basically going to, if this blows up, Panini makes ducats next year. We're raining money, right? I mean, we got World Cup coming up too again in a couple more years, and we just had it. But Panini's just killing it next year. Kyler Murray, Zion Williams. Does Upper Deck go like, we'll sell it for $800 million? And Panini goes, okay, cool. I mean, you think that's going to, could that possibly happen where LeBron James and Michael Jordan autos are back in Panini?
Hypothetically, I mean, I'm just speaking here, and this is how I foresee a situation maybe going down. Upper Deck is
Are they still trying to climb out of debt?
I think right now with their license and what they're doing, I think they're sustainable. I don't think the goal is at this point to take over the industry.
Right.
I think they feel comfortable with where they're at, and I think what I foresee them doing is I think you're right. I think they're waiting for it to blow up and maybe obtain a couple more of these huge, huge athletes that another manufacturer may need, and then package it up, sell the whole company. Upper Deck, and we've been talking about this for a long time, but Upper Deck, NHL, Zion, Ben Simmons, LeBron James, Tiger Woods, Wayne Gretzky, everybody. And they're like, who wants to buy it? Here's the price. I mean, I can guarantee you there is two manufacturers that I think would basically bid each other up to the point where...
Well, yeah, it's obviously Topps and Panini. I mean, it can't be any other players.
I wasn't trying to name drop.
Well, I mean, it's kind of
I said two manufacturers. It could have been... It could have been Leaf. Could have been Cryptozoic. Could have been Leaf. Could have been Sage. Could have been Doug's Duels.
I'm in contract.
But I think Upper Deck is waiting for the right time that a manufacturer, they want to kind of force their hand into paying an absolutely insane amount of money. And how do you do that? You acquire things that another manufacturer needs.
Right. Because, I mean, if you think about it from Panini's standpoint, they've obviously got Zion next year, so they don't have to worry about next year. But there's going to be a Michael Carter Williams year. I know Giannis came out of that, but he didn't come out of it at the beginning, and sales were slow. You could just have those Jordan LeBron autos on the back burner, waiting to sell product.
And the argument with Panini is that they probably look at it and go, well, you guys already did it. You guys did it with Ben Simmons' rookie year. You guys signed him to an autograph exclusive. Did that hurt our brand that year? Look what Ben Simmons silver sell for.
Right.
Look what Ben Simmons cards sold for all year without a piece of jersey or without an autograph. Look what we did. So we go ahead, keep on doing it. Because you gotta figure, every time Upper Deck does that, how are they monetizing that?
Right.
They're only releasing a couple products a year that right. even have these players' autographs in it. And then they do the UDA stuff that the UDA stuff is really nice, but I don't think they look at that and go, UDA pays the bills.
No, I mean, they're very expensive and they're very nice pieces. But I mean, what me and you've heard at different events too is Jordan specifically and LeBron's kind of the same way, where they may not want to work with Panini for the simple fact that Panini needs a lot more autographs, needs a lot more from each one of their exclusive.
But you don't think Panini would be able to work out a compromise? They must do it with a lot of the vets that they have.
Well, I was thinking they got Tom Brady back, right?
So they had to work out a compromise with Tom Brady. And they had to work out a compromise with Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers signs a little bit. He's in like, he may have 10 to 15 autos in every product. And you look at Drew Brees and he has a handful of autos in every product. A lot of these players who, they don't need the extra money. The time to them is worth more than sitting down and signing autographs. Steph Curry, they must have worked out a deal with him at some point because he's in products.
Right.
And I think he probably has had a conversation with them saying, you guys can use, you guys can put me in products, but I am only going to sign for one day out of the year for, 3 hours.
Right. Well, and that's probably what Jordan, I mean, you could probably, if they got Jordan and LeBron, it would probably be like 10 autos in the set. Like, you would have NT, there'd be a logo man, and there'd be 10 autos, and there'd be 10 other autos.
But you also look at a manufacturer obtaining the Upper Deck portfolio of releases. And, exquisite. What do you think Exquisite is worth? Exquisite is considered the first ever ultra premium release.
Yeah.
If they had Exquisite logoed autos of Jordan and LeBron James currently,
yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous.
It would be insane.
I mean, old school guys have been holding on to those. They don't want this to happen.
I mean, and there's so many things they can do retro versions of that, and they could re-release, like, they could actually do an exquisite, like, RPA design of Michael Jordan. Or they could, like, do an 86, 87 Fleer.
Oh, yeah. There's SP Authentic. There's Upper Deck Black. Because
Upper Deck owns... They own the Fleer brand.
Right.
They own the exquisite name and the SP Authentic and Black. How about Black Diamond.
Fleer Optic. Fleer, shiny chrome Fleer designs. I mean, come on.
The possibilities are endless. And I know both manufacturers have probably really, really thought about it.
So we'll see. I mean, it's interesting because I'm just off the cuff here, but, you know, if you read some of the stories about Upper Deck, I mean, the rise and fall is sensational. I mean, they owned the world, 89. They owned the world for a while. Then they started burning bridges. They burned the Yu-Gi-Oh! Bridge. They had the exclusive right to distribute Yu-Gi-Oh! In the United States. They backdoored a bunch of special cards. They messed with the MLB Players Association. They lost the MLB license. They weren't able to put out products. And they started getting sued by other former athletes like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. This is all public knowledge. You can find it on the internet. And they were in a lot of debt. And the McWilliam family, sadly, Richard McWilliam, who started in Upper Deck, passed away. And you could find about crazy stories about him on the internet. There's all kinds of depositions of his court cases. It's very fascinating if you're into that stuff. I know I am. He passed away, and now it's the McWilliam Family Foundation, which I believe is run by his wife and maybe his wife's brother and some other people. And they may be just waiting. I mean, they may just be waiting for the fact where they can sell and just call it quits, make a lot of money, get out of this thing.
They had a pretty big hole that they had to dig themselves out of. And they did a phenomenal job of steering the ship in the right direction.
Right. Fabulous. Jason Mazra is fabulous.
And they've done an amazing job of... There's this black cloud over Upper Deck. There's a lot of bad things that were going on. And they kind of, like I said, steered the ship in the right direction and completely changed the culture of what people kind of... I mean, no one's ever going to forget the bad stuff. But people are starting to lean towards the... It was what it was, and it's a completely different company now.
Right, right. Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe they're building it up to rebuild those relationships with the players' associations and the license.
Without knowing where, and this is just all fun to talk about, without knowing where their head is at, you know, I know if, like, I was running a company and I passed, my wife would have no want to really run this company. You know what I'm saying? She would, you know, obviously try to do her best, but she didn't live and breathe it for 10 years now. So I don't know what would happen at that point. If I was in her position, I would probably, you know, try to sell, you know, obviously it's pennies on the dollar compared to Upper Deck, but I'm just saying, I don't know, you know, who's holding it together other than maybe employees that are trying to just have pride at this point. So you would think that, you know, the upper management or whoever, you know, we're in this bubble. So that could be the big change, Upper Deck. But before we go, I do want to talk about Bowman. We've already ran 48 minutes on this podcast. I feel like it's been a pretty good podcast here. And thank you guys for tuning in. You can follow us at mojobreak.com. Subscribe to us on YouTube as well. You can find the live version of these shows. This week's episode is only going to be audio, but next week we'll be back doing a live show. And we'll have all kinds of stuff to talk about. But I wanted to jump into Bowman. And we had the great Joe Staley, 49ers, a 13-year, six-time Pro Bowler, come in and break some Bowman with us. He's a huge card collector.
And the Wander Whisperer.
And the Wander Whisperer. He's the first to pull a Wander. But we had a couple great names out of Bowman, and I wanted to play the audio reaction of one of the names, which I think is name of the year for sports right now. And here it is.
Got a nice, sparkly one. Autoed Brock. Death Rage! Holy hell! What a name! Brock Death Rage! Outfielder for the Tigers. My name is Brock Death Rage!
So, yes, out of Joe's side of the case, we were doing a triple case yesterday with Joe Staley and the Death Rage. That's going to be a... That is going to be a drop on our soundboard as soon as I get
that,
in.
I hope that guy makes it to the majors.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty sure it may be Deathridge.
Probably.
But
it doesn't sound as cool.
Forever Deathridge. Even if he does come up, he is going to be known as Deathridge, not Deathridge.
Yep, Deathridge. And looking at some early sales now, we're only one day in for Bowman, so we don't really have a lot of completed sale action, but obviously Wander's in the lead. Everybody's chasing Wander. Joe pulled a gold. Wander, Franco, he's the Wander Whisperer, as Dan alluded to, but we've got a first Bowman orange auto for $20,000 or best offer currently up there. We have an orange shimmer for $19,000 or best offer. What a discount compared to the other orange. Chrome Atomic, those are numbered to 100. Sorry, the oranges are numbered to 25, which I failed to mention, but the Atomic, which was new last year, $3,300 or best offer. So Wander's in the lead. You've got Kikuchi, who's a redemption, the pitcher for the Mariners out of Japan. You've got Joey Bart, and there's a few guys that people are trying to collect. Sully Matias. Looks like Sully Matias's autos are... trending around a 150 a base auto, 150 a refractor, hitter for the Royals. So there's a lot to kind of discover with this set and see where the demand goes. Obviously, we're just talking. We talked about these last two guys, these last three guys. But there's what Julio Pablo Martinez.
And we're talking about guys who are 2 to 3 years away from, you know, making it to the big leagues.
Right.
Even if this is where I think Gary V. didn't really touch on this type of collector.
Mm-hmm.
The collector who is essentially investing almost into penny stocks.
Right.
And looking for the huge, huge payout.
Right.
Is Wander Franco $20,000? Wander Franco could end up not ever playing in the major leagues.
Right. Right.
And you have a Wander Franco card that you paid $20,000 for.
Right. It's crazy.
There is Wander Franco cards that are selling on eBay right now constantly for $300, $400, $500, $600, $700.
Base, $1,000. Not numbered.
Yeah, $1,000. This is only on the speculation that in 2 to 3 years, what's he going to be? Could he be in the lineup? Could he be a starter? Could he be a utility player? I'll tell you right now, based on the $20,000, if you were to invest that type of money, you truly think that Wander Franco is going to be one of the greatest players of all time.
Well, and that's the beauty of baseball. And, you know, if you guys are basketball collectors and football collectors, you know within year one, a player gets drafted in the NBA, like Luka, he plays right away because there's only 12 roster spots on a team. So he's going to play right away. You're going to know if your investment's paying off right away. Now you have cases like Donovan Mitchell, who went late first round, killed it in summer, and then his cards, because we had Lonzo Ball and Tatum last year before, and then Mitchell came into the fold. Football, same thing. It's quarterback driven, and if a running back like Saquon has a good year, but you know right away, in almost year one that it's going to happen. Baseball, Trout was drafted in 2009, didn't play until about 2011, 2012. There's 3 years where you could have bought the Chrome draft autos for $50 to $100 easily, maybe lower than that. And those things are $10,000 now. So that's the beauty of baseball, is that you have hope, I guess. You don't know right away that you just, you bought a bunch of Shawn Mannions and he's not going to work out. You don't have that, going on for you. That's the beauty of baseball collecting. And you're just, I'm looking at some of the completed auctions for Bowman, and these are all best offer accepted. So there was an orange Joey Bart, $4,000 best offer accepted. I'm not going to watch count all these, but I'm just going to go over all the numbers. Another $4,000 orange auto. Man, most of the Joey Bart oranges have been pulled because we pulled one yesterday. Marco Luciano, orange, $4,000 or best offer. Gold Wander Franco, $5,000 or best offer. Sold. These are all sold at a certain price. People were already accepting offers. There's been a ton of action on Bowman. And, it's crazy. I mean, it just elevates every year. Every year of Bowman, it elevates to just the hype is just building upon itself every year. And Dan's right. I mean, this guy's 18. Wander Franco is 18 years old. There's also another Wander Franco who's his brother. And then there's another Wander Franco who's his dad. I mean, who knows if this is the right Wander Franco hitting home runs that we're all getting all crazy about.
I was doing a little bit of research on the great Wander Franco, the 18-year-old on the Rays. He isn't a power hitter. Which, he may be growing into a power hitter. He's only 18. But he doesn't really hit bombs.
Well, in 61 games last year in rookie ball at the age of 17, which is insane, he hit 11 home runs. He batted .351.
Yeah,
that's in 60 games, though. So that's one every five games he's in a home run.
That's also rookie ball.
Rookie ball, right. This year, he's 18 years old. He's in A. I don't know if it's high level or low level A. It's Midwest Bowling Green. And he doesn't have a home run, but he's had 12 games without a home run. He's batted .256. So he's went from .351 to, it's early.
It's hard to especially when a player is that young and they did well in rookie ball. Now he's going against players who've been playing professionally for a couple years.
Right. Right, exactly.
So, I mean, it's tough. I know you want to invest in a player that's really, really young, but I almost like investing in a player that played 3 years of college.
Well, then that would be Joey Bart, right?
Joey Bart put up three to four years in college, hit against college level pitching, proved that he can hit, and then I think it's an easier path to the major leagues.
Right. Well, you could say the same, but see, Vladimir Guerrero is 19 now, I believe, so he's very close in age, and he has been playing, oh no, he's 20 now, he just turned 20, he's been playing since he was 17, he's currently, he went down a step, he's currently in high A.
Yeah, they're going to call him up.
Oh, okay.
Because I bet you...
Yeah, four games there.
I bet you high A is physically closer to Toronto.
Florida. And then he was also in Buffalo. So he's been in Buffalo and Florida.
Are you sure he's not in Buffalo right now?
Because
I would say that they would move him closer.
Oh, yeah, I saw on his Instagram that he was in Buffalo.
So, yeah, they moved him closer because they're about ready to call him.
He was batting .412 in Buffalo with two home runs, but only five games since he's been back. So, but career minor league batting average .331, 43 home runs in 1,000 at-bats. So, yeah, I mean, this kid's the real deal. I mean, he's also in Bowman. It's not his first Bowman.
He's a home run hitter.
He's a home run hitter.
He hits bombs. That's the big difference.
Right.
The Wander Franco, I'm concerned that it's nothing on him. He may be a good player, but I don't think he's a power.
But
I don't think he's a power hitter.
You know, we go back to, and obviously I'm only using this as an example. It's not based on race, but I'm looking at the prior guys that have sold, right? And you've got Mike Trout. You've had Chris Bryant. You've had Bryce Harper. In earlier Bowman, we're talking about, yeah, Kurt Kershaw, Strasburg. There's not been a whole lot of international prospects that have just went crazy.
Ronald Acuna.
Now, though.
Juan Soto.
But long-term, I'm saying long-term, it seems like these guys, it seems like prospects just latch onto them, but they don't hold on to their cards long enough. Where people do hold on to Trouts, people do hold on to Harpers, people do hold on to Bryants because they can relate. Because I don't want to say card collectors are predominantly white, but they are. Let's just face facts. Card collectors are predominantly white. So I'm just saying, do you see any, like, Wander Franco comes out and he's, I mean, look at Mookie Betts. I mean, he's not an international player, but Mookie Betts doesn't sell for as well as Trout. But Mookie Betts had a better year than Trout last year.
Mookie Betts should be selling for more than
Yeah.
You can make an argument that Mookie Betts is the best player in the league right now over Mike Trout.
Oh, yes, 100%. I don't disagree there.
You can make that argument. His cards don't sell for a fraction
right
of what Mike Trout sold. Actually, Chris Bryant has had a tough couple years, and he started off as a tough year. Granted, he did win an MVP, and he won a World Series for the Cubs. He probably outsells Mookie Betts.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. So What about your Wanderers? What about your Vlads? We saw Vlad break with Panini. He didn't speak English at all. And that, no knock on that. I'm not saying he needs to. But I'm saying that
the common denominator on that one, though,
is he hits bombs.
It's not enough to hit. If you hit a home run that's 380 feet, great job. But if you hit a home run that's 450 feet and it's majestic and it's in the upper deck, yet that gets more eyeballs on that player.
Yeah.
Aaron Judge, when he was hitting bombs, he was outselling everybody.
Right.
So, I mean, what can you say about that? Like, why doesn't Aaron Judge sell for as much as Aaron Judge did when he was...
Okay, well, I agree with your theory there, but what about Chris Davis?
Chris Davis can't get a hit.
The A's. The A's Chris Davis. The K Chris Davis.
Oh, not the Orioles.
The guy's last 3 years, I think, has the most home runs out of any active player.
He plays for the A's.
Okay, but this guy, Wander Franco, plays for the Rays. So,
but there's an uncertainty. The thing about Chris Davis is that you know Chris Davis is going to hit 240 to 250.
Right.
And he's on the A's. Does he hit really, really far bombs? Are they upper deck? Are they majestic shots?
A couple of them I've seen this year,
Are they majestic?
Yes.
Are they Aaron Judge type of majestic?
Yeah, dude, he hit one in Oakland earlier this season. He has the most home runs already this year. And he hit them in upper deck. I mean, it looks like a ball player. I mean,
do you think the average baseball fan could name three players on the Oakland A's?
No. Can you name three players on the Rays?
Lau?
Well, active, like that are on the team.
The second baseman.
Okay, but the Giants just play the Rays. That's the only reason you know.
They have Kiermaier.
Okay.
They got some dudes you throw the ball
right,
to.
Right, exactly. You don't know. Same thing with the people. If I asked a Rays fan who's on the A's, they probably would know. So why is Wander Franco going to be on another team at some point? Is he going to be a Ray for life? I mean, is he going to the Yankees? Then okay. But like that's why I'm trying. Are we getting to a point with Wander Franco that the hype is unnatural? Like we just needed somebody to put in the lead.
Oh, I don't even think. Are you?
That's not a question, I guess.
Yeah, that is. I think that's exactly where we're at.
That we just need somebody to hold on to right now.
But why him?
I don't know. Why not Joey Bart?
He plays for the Giants. I don't know.
Giants. I mean, I'm a Giants fan, so it's hard for me to step outside my fandom.
Yeah, but look at. I mean,
look at Posey.
Posey sells for nothing.
Well, he doesn't hit the long ball, so there goes the theory, right?
He doesn't hit the long ball, but he is an MVP. He's a batting champion. He's a three World Series champion. And you can make an argument that in the last 10 to 15 years, he's going to go down. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer, no doubt.
Right.
I mean. You win three world championships, you're going into the Hall of Fame.
But to put it in perspective, his autos, and I'm not even joking here, his first Bowman, which is 2008 Bowman draft, I have quite a few of them, are selling less than Joey Bart, who's never took a baseball bat in the major leagues. So
because it's we already know what to expect with Buster Posey.
But we got what we wanted with Buster Posey. Isn't that the ultimate success? He's got three World Series championships.
He doesn't hit home runs. It's also
confusing.
It's also what have you done for me lately?
And it's not like he's watered down. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
It's what have you done for me lately? He basically hasn't had. He's had a couple years where he's been.
Well,
injured.
I mean, how many years did? So, Derek Jeter's kind of an anomaly because he didn't have autos until he retired. Well, he did, but he was upper deck and then he didn't have any autos. But like. Derek Jeter probably went solid long period of time towards the end of his career where he didn't win a championship. His cards were still selling.
The captain for the Yankees?
But he doesn't hit home runs as much.
He's the captain of the Yankees.
So he's... Okay. But the Giants are just in that category. Maybe not fans, but the Giants have a long lineage of history, too.
Dude, are you trying to compare Buster Posey to Derek Jeter?
Well, maybe. Whew. How many championships did Derek Jeter win?
You can't compare... Derek Jeter has, like, charisma, and he is, like, a Yankee. He is the Yankee. He's the Yankee. When you think of the Giants, do you think of Buster Posey as being the Giant?
So he has won four World Series with the Yankees.
When you think of the Giants, you look at the logo, you think of Buster Posey. You think of him as being the Giant. over Barry Bonds and over Willie Mays and over McCovey and over Marichal. You think Buster Posey?
No, I don't.
Not even close. Buster Posey, maybe.
But why, though? Why not?
But you think of the Yankees, and dude, I actually think Derek Jeter over like Babe Ruth or Joe DiMaggio or Mickey Mantle. I think Derek Jeter.
No, I don't. I don't think.
I think Derek Jeter.
Let's look at their career. So career batting average for Posey is .305 currently, and then that's going down. Career batting average for Jeter .310, right? Is WAR is 72.4 in his career, and Posey's is 41.
But Derek Jeter was the ultra high profiled athlete.
So it had nothing to do with his skills on the field.
But you act like he was a 230 hit.
But I'm saying these stats right now, Buster Posey is not far from Derek Jeter, stat-wise.
But he ain't Derek Jeter.
But I know, but I'm trying to understand why.
Because...
Is it the right place, right time?
No, being a Yankees organization, winning championships, and being a high-profile athlete. You can make an argument that Derek Jeter was one of the most high-profile athletes in all of sports in his era. I mean, Michael Jordan, Derek Jeter.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree there, but why? So Buster Posey has three World
Series. Like, for example, Derek Jeter, let's say that Derek Jeter was in a movie or in a nationwide like commercial. Everybody who watched that would recognize that's Derek Jeter.
Yeah.
Buster Posey, they have no idea who that is.
True.
If he wasn't wearing a Giants hat and a baseball uniform, they wouldn't know who he is.
Well, is that based on the time period that baseball was bigger, had bigger stars back in the time period of Jeter?
I just think Derek Jeter is one of the biggest stars and faces of definitely our era of baseball.
Yeah. It's just funny, but if you look at the stats, granted he's having a terrible year so far this year, but you look at the WAR, he's about halfway there, assuming, you know, he's 32. I don't know if he's going to play another 10 years. Probably not. But his batting average is 5 points off. Derek Jeter's got 4 World Series championships. Posey has 3.
I have nothing against Posey, but Posey isn't... His interviews are by the book. He's not dating like Madonna.
So...
He's not dating people who are like... huge superstars.
So then what? Go okay. So I'm rounding it back around to Wander Franco. So what makes you think Wander Franco is ever going to be marketable? So that means it's a bad investment right now. It's a good investment right now.
I'm pretty sure you could rewind this about 20 minutes, and I said it was a terrible investment.
But I'm saying the Derek Jeter, Vladimir Guerrero's of the world here.
Vladimir Guerrero, I think, is a good investment.
But he's not gonna be Derek Jeter famous. Nobody's gonna know who he is if they don't watch baseball.
He's gonna hit home runs, and they're gonna be long. They're gonna be long home runs.
All right. Well, we'll keep that. Well, maybe we'll keep this conversation going for next week. Thank you guys for tuning in. Follow us on Twitter at mojobreak_com. And we got Flawless Breaking Friday. We got more Bowman for the next few weeks. And I'm going to play that outro song. But thank you guys for tuning in to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe to us on YouTube. Subscribe to us here on iTunes or however you're digesting this podcast. And you'll get notifications when the new one's up. And we appreciate all the kind comments of everybody that's been listening to the show and giving us a shout. I just got an email from TKO. Thank you. You're one of the reasons why we do this show, you know, is to give you guys info and entertain you guys. So we appreciate that. And we'll see you guys on show 89. Peace out.
For more info and your break spot. And we will see you next time on